What up? It's time for Movie Mastery in theaters now. I am your host, John. Over there is Jeff. We went and saw the movie in theaters that you voted for this month, and the winner this month was Hereditary.
Yay! Hereditary. Hooray. A horror movie. Finally, a horror movie in June for the rest of us.
It is indeed a horror movie, which I love horror movies. Jeff does not love horror movies.
I love good horror movies, and there are very, very few of them.
That means you don't love horror movies. You just love very specific movies.
I guess that's fair. I feel like love means forgiving something, even though it's totally shitty. So if you love horror movies, it's just that you are ignoring the many constant faults that almost every horror movie has. Love means ignoring the warning signs.
No, love means you enjoy the horror movie for what it is, rather than what you want it to be.
So I guess instead you take all the faults of horror, the constant, never-ending faults of every horror movie.
I don't put horror movies on a pedestal, Jeff.
Neither do I. I put them in a recycling bin, and they get picked up every other Tuesday.
Wow, you have a lot of horror movies you put out then, apparently.
I do. At least one every fortnight.
This has been getting a ton of good press.
Yeah, a lot of really positive press and a lot of, like, from the makers of The Witch, although I think they just mean a producer.
Yeah, I think it's, like, maybe the same production company and a producer or something.
Yeah, so they basically wanted to ride on the coattails of The Witch because it was a recent, fairly successful horror movie, which is rare for those to happen, to be honest. This isn't just me harping about horror movies.
It is very rare for a horror movie to end up getting critical acclaim. Even if, say, audiences love a particular horror movie, the movie getting, like you say, critical acclaim is very difficult. I think most...
They could get some. They just need to put in, like, Mrs. Incredible and her big butt, apparently. That really drags in the critics.
Yeah, I think, what was that, The New Yorker?
Yeah, The New Yorker review of Incredibles 2, which is mostly him describing how difficult it must be for the rubes in the theater to conceal their boners.
Yeah.
where he was like, well, I am, as an effete movie reviewer journalist, will have no trouble concealing my obvious boner for the drive home.
Maybe if they were like, look, we need to get Toni Collette to be real thick in this movie so that The New Yorker will spooge all over it.
And that part of the beginning of his review where he's like, imagine, if you will, if every movie in Hollywood began with the film, Honey, Trampoline Me.
Imagine if every movie was my fetish.
My weird specific fetish. I want a stretchy lady with a big butt.
Wow, what is that, a cake song?
And a long arm.
Hey! Oh, no!
Yeah, I hadn't said enough yas and no's yet for it to officially be a cake song.
Critical acclaim. Hereditary. Everybody is loving it, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and say, we'll get to the spoilers after the music, mm-hmm. but... Non-spoiler review, this was very good for a large portion of this movie.
The first third of this movie is awesome.
I would say the first two-thirds for me is very good.
I could probably agree with that as well. There's a lot of horror mistakes that occur in the second third of the movie where they're just generic things that always happen in horror movies that I hate. But it's fine. It's all well executed. It's pretty. The visuals are nice. The score is fantastic. And the casting is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
The son and daughter in this movie are the best kid actors I've seen in a long time.
And, I mean, the adults do a great job.
Oh, yeah. We got Toni Collette.
With them.
Yeah, we got Toni Collette in there, who apparently I'm supposed to know who that is. It took me a minute to remember that the only time I've ever seen her is in one of the Vin Diesel movies that we've had to review for the show before. I can't remember which. It's a movie.
I think it's XXX.
It might be. It's a movie where a whole bunch of people, like big sexy people, have to pretend that he's not a 50-year-old potato that's been run through a greasy laminator a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Instead, they think he's hot and dynamic and interesting, even though he's like, even though he looks like his mouth is a blowhole. It was that movie.
It was that one.
But Toni Collette was in it, and she was like, ooh, look at that sexy hunk of man, I bet she had to say.
I bet she was forced to say through contractually.
Through gritted teeth.
very good acting, very well-made movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say if you're a fan of horror, there is a decent chance that you'll very much like this.
Yeah, I had to see this separately from John, and I texted him, I think you'll like this. I didn't, and I think you will.
I, as I mentioned, liked about two-thirds of it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, the third act of this movie just can go bite an amazing fart for me.
I cannot wait to get to the spoilers, because the spoilers... But let's be clear here. This is a horror movie with a first and third act twist, both of which are interestingly revealed, so you do not want to listen to the rest of this if you're super into horror movies and you were planning to go see it, because it's got a lot of spoils to spoil.
Oh, yeah. There is a lot of twists and, you know, the spoilers that you are going to get. A lot of times you might think, oh, this won't ruin a movie, but I think not knowing at least, you know, the first act twist is very good to not know.
Yeah.
So
to give you the basic premise that the trailers would give you, there's a little girl who appears to have picked up some evil, somehow passed down from her crazy grandmother.
Yeah, I mean...
And so she makes a click sound with her mouth. She goes... I can't even do it right now. There it is. That's the noise.
No, I think the only reason this got voted for is because both Quinn and I were just beside ourselves angry at the trailer for this, because we're like, don't make mouth sounds the trailer. Don't do that.
Well, you should if you're Neil Cicierega.
Yeah, if that's who you are, then make mouth sounds as a trailer. However, if you are anyone else and you decide is a good thing to just keep doing over and over again, it's not.
Yeah, so...
But anyway, we'll get into it. I'm going to say... You'll probably like it, even if you have the same complaints that I do or that Jeff does.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably at least appreciate it, but I don't think this needs a watch in the theaters. I could definitely give this a watch when it comes out.
Yeah. All right.
We'll do some music, and then we are going to come back with the full ridiculous spoiler review of Hereditary. And we are back. It's time to get deep, balls deep, into this movie.
So right out of the gate, the whole concept of things being passed down through genes, or, you know, what hereditary means, has nothing to do with this.
No. Fucking, that is, right out of the gate, let you know, hereditary, as a term, is a red herring for this film.
Mm-hmm.
It is just straight-up misdirection.
Yeah, it's just some misdirection. This is not a movie about evil genes.
No. I mean, nor is it a movie about, like, evil genes that are, I don't know, passed through a sisterhood of traveling pants.
Yeah, I was going to say, the sisterhood of the venomous pants. This is not.
This is not that.
Yeah. But, okay, so basically the movie opens on a silent flat shot of an obituary, white text on black. Some old lady died. She is survived by the family we're about to see.
Yep.
She is not survived by her son, who died a long time ago, or by her husband, who also died a long time ago. And there you go.
Yeah, the fact that they didn't have any narration is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Not having that, like, read out to you is good, because mm-hmm. it just makes you sort of sit there and sit in it. That happens a few times in this, where you see a note or a letter somewhere, and it just lingers on it so you can read it.
Just enough so you can kind of read it.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty fast reader, so I actually managed to read a whole lot of one of the books that got opened up, and it was fun to read.
Read a whole lot of it.
I did, because it opened to a page, and there was a big, stupid picture, and then there are a couple highlighted things that you were supposed to read so you would know what's going on. But I was like, all right, done with that. All right, let's see what else we got on this page. Oh, neat. Goetia. That's fun to read about. Well, tell me about that.
Well, that was a sitcom on UPN, I think.
Don't even. All right. So... Okay, the movie opens with a very sleepy boy, and I can't remember his name.
The sleepiest of boys.
Alex or Michael or something?
Yeah, it was Michael Scott. It was
Alex Michaels.
It was George Michaels.
Shawn Michaels.
Yes, it was Shawn Michaels. He was doing some sweet chin music. The little kid is Peter.
Peter. Okay. So just like I was saying, it's Michael is very close to Peter.
Just like I said, mm-hmm. Alex, Michael, Peter, they're all the same.
Alex, Michael, Peter, Sean is asleep, and his dad comes into the room to... Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about the slow zoom on the dollhouse.
Which is a great thing. So
it's a cool shot.
One of the main things in this is that the mom that we are going to have in this movie, her whole thing is making... like miniature displays of things, like super intricate, very detailed miniature art.
Yeah. I'm not all that impressed by it, if I'm honest. It looks like she's buying all the parts and just painting them with some cheap ass Tester's gloss model paint. It looks like a wash on there. I know. A lot of the stuff she's doing looks like she bought all the parts and just assembled them like dollhouse furniture. It doesn't look like she's a huge artist. It just looks like she had to do a fifth grade project about a mission. So, anyway, yeah, we're zooming in on her intricate dollhouse, and it zooms into the boy's room, and then it is the boy's room.
Yeah, it was a very good shot.
And well, technically executed, yeah.
Yeah, when that happened, I was like, oh, good. This is going to be an interesting movie from an artistic perspective, because I was like, oh, you're going to do neat things with, like, camera work and miniatures and things.
Unfortunately, all it really means is that the mom has a job that requires her to stay in her creepy-ass house all the time.
Well, it means you get a bunch of, like, little creepy-ass minis.
Yeah, it's mostly like any other job in a horror movie. It exists to keep the characters in one area.
And I really just wanted Beetlejuice to show up in one of those dioramas and be like, eh.
Or a couple of demonic toys. Would that have killed them?
Come on. Just one little puppet?
What's the, who does the demonic toys have to fight? It's
the Puppet Master.
Dollman. Dollman is, because Dollman was the superhero from that same production company. He was a 6-inch tall man. And at one point he had to fight the demonic toys.
Yeah, but it was Puppet Master versus Evil Toys was an actual movie.
Yeah,
it was,
and so is Dollman versus Demonic Toys. They're both, I don't know if they're both Full Moon features, but that's
oh,
what.
Oh, they definitely are.
Yeah.
Don't you fret about that.
All right, I'm not too worried about it. Dollman is a 6-inch tall man from a planet of all 6-inch tall people, and they have, like, laundromats and stuff. I mean, it's one of those movies where he's an alien in the lamest sense of the term.
Good.
Yeah. On my planet, it is also 1983.
Okay, good.
Anyway, the boy is being roused by his dad and the family dog.
Ah, the family dog.
I'm adding a B to family. That's my new thing, and I'm doing it.
We see the other kid, Charlie, the little girl, is... sleeping out in a treehouse.
Yes, as she often does, to the consternation of her father, who is often cold.
Yeah. It was like, oh, it's so cold out here, you could get pneumonia.
And then her response is the weird, that's okay, which is apparently a regular thing that she says.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't want you sleeping out here, you're going to catch your death of cold. And she goes, that's okay. And he's like, no, it isn't. What? No. So we see the two kids, they're a little creepy. We see the dad, he is... Gabriel Byrne slowly coughing his way into Michael Douglas.
Just this slow metamorphosis mm-hmm. from Gabriel Byrne into Michael Douglas.
He started his Michael Douglas phase, and it has hit him real hard.
He's in that pupa stage where when he emerges, he will be Michael Douglas.
He will unfold his mighty Michael Douglas wings and flap them.
So majestic. So beautiful.
So, and the mom, again, is Toni Collette. She's working busily away at painting some miniatures, but she also has to take the kids to school or something.
To the funeral.
Thank you. Yes, it's the funeral. Everyone's getting dressed for the funeral.
Yeah.
Because the grandmother has died, and this is the family with the dead mom.
And, goddamn, the eulogy from the mom for the grandmother is
ice
like,
cold.
Fucking, seems there's a lot of people here. I don't know.
That's weird. My mom didn't have any friends I was aware of.
My mom was secretive and kind of a bitch.
Yeah, she basically it runs down to my mom was super private, so it almost feels like I'm betraying her by even talking about her in front of other people.
Yeah.
All of her friends were private. I've never met any of them. And all of the things she did were private, and we rarely spoke.
she was always right, and if she wasn't, then that was your opinion and you were wrong.
Yes. While she was always fighting with us, she also loved more deeply than anyone I had ever known. And that was the one part of the eulogy where you could kind of tell that it was bullshit.
Yeah. When she's like, oh, God, I got to throw that on there.
I guess she's loved deeper and she's loved sweeter. I forget how that song goes. John knows it. That's one of John's karaoke go-to jams.
Yeah, one of them jams I got.
Yeah, John's got some go-to karaoke jams.
I got some good jams. I got some apple peach. I got some raspberry.
The important thing to take away is that their grandmother once did 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu.
You're damn right she did. So, wink.
Hey-oh. Anyway, it's creepy at the funeral. There's a lot of people there who are weirdly smiley. One of them is especially smiley right at Charlie, the little girl.
Yeah, Charlie...
Great casting. Let's just say that. She's off-putting looking. She's unpleasant to be around.
Oh, yeah. She's got a lot of very, you know, weird mannerisms about her.
Pigeon-toed, hair in her eyes, constantly eating food by just keeping it in her mouth. Like, just puts the chocolate bar in her mouth and just sort of leaves it there.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of the things in that, is she was constantly eating sweets.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another thing that never paid off in this.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it did. It did.
No. It pays off in the fact that, fuck it, spoiler alert, she goddamn dies.
Yeah.
But as far as later on when you have, like, the whole haunting nonsense going on, there was no point where, like, candy was a thing?
Well, she's barely in it at all. Once she cacks it, you get this impression that she's, like, supposed to be the haunting spirit that's bothering the family from that point forward. And there's one shot of her floating around as a ghost, sort of, but... Not really, and she doesn't do anything that's like her in that scene.
Well, also, honestly, in this movie, it's hard to really tell what the fuck is supposed to be haunting or doing.
There's no rules. It's one of those movies where it's an unreliable narrator insanity movie, so there's just no rules, and anytime anything's haunting, it's someone's gonna wake up or scream or it'll cut to a school and they won't bother talking about whatever the fuck just happened. It's just one of those. So she's eating some chocolate at the funeral, and her father comes up behind her and is like, that doesn't have nuts in it, does it? Because we need to set up that she is deathly allergic to nuts.
Yeah, and then, you know, the mom shows up and is like, hey, that doesn't have nuts. Oh, no, I made sure.
So there might be something wrong with Charlie because she's 13 and apparently is too dumb to know that she's deathly allergic to nuts. She's like, no, this doesn't have nuts. It's just a Hershey bar. Look at it. It's very obviously a Hershey bar. Like the most recognizable candy ever made.
Yeah.
See, it's a Hershey bar.
Well, is that a Hershey bar with almonds?
Yeah, that would have a different color wrapping. It would be gold. It would have the gold filling in the wrapper. This very clearly a silver, traditional, generic Hershey bar, Dad. But anyway.
Are you sure you didn't take an almond Hershey and put it into a Hershey wrapper?
I mean, given the fact that at the end of the movie, when she's about to die, not the end of the movie, she's just like, oh, cake with nuts in it? Of course I want cake with nuts in it. I'm a dumb fucking idiot. So maybe she literally doesn't know. Or there could actually be something wrong with her.
Oh, honestly, she... For a lot of it reads, like, fairly autistic as far as, like, she can only express herself really with, like, pictures.
Mm-hmm.
She does a lot of drawings.
And she has the bog-standard generic horror movie creepy-ass kid room.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's...
It's a bunch of models she built out of garbage.
Yeah, the problem is... What they do with Charlie is a split between... We wanted to show a kid who's got, you know... some sort of either autism or a learning disability or something like that, and they play it very straight for a lot of that,
mm-hmm.
But then they also decided, well, we can't have a movie about a little kid without making her a standard movie horror
little kid. Let's fill a room with eyeless dolls and fucking trash goblins.
Oh, yeah, she's got to be constantly making, like, toys out of knives and shit, and you're like, all right, well, sure.
Okay, great. Just call up The Conjuring 2 and borrow some of the nonsense they put in every room in their fucking house.
And, you know, they get back and the mom is...
She's not grumpy about it.
Yeah, she's just like,
Yeah, she... Well, apparently we learn throughout the course of the movie that the mom has been... The grandmother had been living with them and was more or less estranged and very riddled with memory loss. So she was basically just sort of catatonic in her room.
Yeah, I mean... Eventually, the mom goes to a grief counseling for lost loved ones, and she's like, oh, you know, my mom had dissociative identity disorder, which was the first flag on this movie where I was like, please don't make this just be, like, all in one of the characters' heads they are every person that you see.
There was a moment around the beginning of this movie where I was terrified that this was just going to be Toni Collette as Crazy the movie.
Yeah, I was going to go to the end and... Toni Collette is the daughter and the son and the husband.
And we just zoom out and she's in an insane asylum already.
Yeah, I was like, please, anytime a horror movie mentions DID, I'm always like, don't you fucking do it.
They don't. That's to their credit. They don't do that.
Yep.
Although there's still a lot of unreliable narration stuff on the part of Toni Collette.
Well, yeah, because we also learned that her mom had all of these problems. Her brother was schizophrenic.
Yeah, her dad starved himself to death.
Yeah.
Because he had, I think she called it delusional paranoia or something. No, it was depression. He had suicidal depression.
And
so he starved himself to death.
So yeah. She's like, yes, literally everyone in my family was in some way disturbed. And she's like, but not me. And so, of course, that's going to bring up the whole, okay, yeah, but you are.
But yes, you. Yeah.
But that, yes, also you.
Yeah, that was a problem. But anyway, they go around the house, and it turns out that most of the people in the house don't care that this old lady died. The son is just kind of like, eh, whatever. Right. I want to play guitar in my bed and also smoke weed, which is the only thing I care about. And the daughter, this is the thing that made me think that she has some kind of learning disability, because when the mom came to visit her and was like, Toni Collette comes to visit the daughter, Charlie, and she's like, are you okay, hon? Are you going to be okay about grandma dying? And she's like, who will take care of me now? And they're like, well, we will. Well, when you die, who will take care of me then? And the answer isn't, you'll grow up someday, sweetie. You know, oh, well, someday, hon, you'll become a big adult who can make your own decisions and live in the world. It's just, I don't know, your brother, maybe, your dad, something.
Yeah.
You'll figure it out.
That is also the point where I was like, okay, it's definitely not just that she's quirky.
Mm-hmm.
It's that she does actually need a caretaker.
Yes, she actually needs a caregiver of some kind. So that all happens. We follow the kids to school, where it turns out that the son is a big old stoner who has regular text message conversations with his friends about his dick. And it's true.
I mean, no. He gets invited to a party, and the message says, bring your dick.
Yeah, but the other text message party or conversation he had with the other guy was like, hey, man, you want to get stoned after school? Something about your dick. I mean, it was just all the text messages I saw that he received included the phrase, your dick. Maybe it's just an in-joke between the two of them. Like,
yeah.
Like regularly. Maybe one time he did show up to a party, and he'd forgotten to bring his dick. And so,
yeah, he was like, oh. Fuck. Oh, God. Oh, no.
Where is it?
Guys,
everyone, can we turn the music down for a second? No one move your feet.
Look, he starts crawling on the ground. Where are you? Come on.
Get back on there.
Damn it. Here it is. It rolled under the couch. Let me just dust that off.
He also has a crush on a completely inconsequential girl character.
Yeah, his crush, you get it in the classroom scene that we first see him.
There's two classroom scenes and then a party.
And then when we go to the party, he's like, oh, I'm going to try and smoke this chick out. And you'd think that something might happen, but nothing happens. It doesn't matter.
No, it's not really a part of the movie. Okay, so at the school, we learn that that's what's happening with him. We then cut to the daughter, to Charlie, who is drawing creepy pictures in her journal and not taking her test. Oh, no, sorry, she isn't drawing. She's building a little model. She's sitting there fiddling with a flashlight battery and some wires and junk, and she's making herself a little headless statue man.
Yeah, and the
teacher comes up and is like,
"Hey, you want to put that away and do the test?"
And she's like, "Okay." And they flip it over, and it's like a one question test. She hasn't even done that yet. But while she's getting ready to start doing the test again, the first jump scare of the movie.
And honestly, one of the only jump scares in the movie
mm-hmm.
is a bird hits the window.
A pigeon flies into the window and bonks and dies.
Ka-donk.
Ka-donk. And then the daughter starts looking curiously at a pair of scissors on the teacher's desk.
Oh, yeah. And you're like, ooh, is this the first sign that the kid is evil and she's going to, like, try and stab someone with scissors?
Yeah, she's going to stabulate someone. She's going to give him an ice cold stab.
Oh, well, that's very friendly of her. I'd like a nice cold stab.
Can you spell that?
Stab.
All right, so I guess we can just jump ahead to the point where she's outside after that.
Yeah, she goes outside and uses the scissors to cut the bird's head off.
Yeah, she cuts the head off the dead pigeon and sticks it in her jacket pocket. And then there is, weirdly, a random lady across the street yelling and waving at her.
Like, hi, hello, wave, smile. You're like, okay.
All right. And she's too kind of off-putting and weird to really pay attention to the lady, so she just sort of, mostly she just sizes up the lady to see if the lady has noticed that she has a bird head in her pocket.
Pretty much, yeah.
But that's pretty much where that ends. At this point, we go back to the house, and we get our first couple of haunting images. The daughter is lured outside by some light.
Yeah, and she goes into the, they live in a fucking cabin in, woods in the middle of a mountain somewhere.
Where they live makes no sense. It's pretty obviously, they live in the hills of Southern California, and everything else that they ever have to go to is in the foothills. So, whenever they're at their house, they're completely isolated. It's the only house you can see in any direction, completely surrounded by beautiful, huge trees, very dark at night, very the big old cloud cover or big old star cover. When they go to, like, the art supply store, endless rolling desert. When they go for drives, endless flat plains.
Oh, yeah. It almost makes me feel like they were going for the feel of, say, a Pacific Northwest with that just tons of trees, very isolated. Mm. It seems very like dark and rainy on the house. But then they were like, okay, we scouted that location. What about the rest of the film? Ah, we'll just do it here in California.
That is very much what it looks like. They're at the house. The daughter decides to follow a light that she's seeing. Excuse me, hiccups.
Yeah, she goes out into the forest and finds what looks like the back of her grandma sitting surrounded by fire in the middle of the woods.
And it's weird woods. She's surrounded by skunk cabbage. Like, actually skunk cabbage, which is like, where are these people?
Why do you have so much skunk weed?
So
the chronic.
Skunk cabbage is not weed.
I know.
It's gross food. But anyway, you know, at this point, the son is trying to figure out if he can go to a party.
Yeah.
So he has heard that there's a party that he should bring his dick to. And so he has gone off.
He is concerned about whether or not his dick can go to this party.
So he goes off to ask his mom if he can go to the party. And you can tell that there's something really tense between the two of them. But he's just like, I want to go to a party. And she's like, well, are you going to drink there? Where are you going? And he has, I got to say, I'm really disappointed in this kid because his lie is fucking trash.
Ah.
Never lie to your parents with a verifiable situation. If you're like, oh, it's a school event. You know what's on calendars? The fucking school events.
Oh, yeah. He's like, oh, it's some school barbecue thing. And you're like, no, dude, don't say that.
Don't say that. Go say you're going to a movie because that lasts a set amount of time.
Say you're going over to your buddy's house, the one that texted you about your dick.
Yeah. Or just a lesser party. That's the right lie to give. I'm going to a party. It's a bunch of dudes. We're going to play D&D.
Oh, yeah. If he was like, oh, I'm going to go over to my friend Tony's house. We've got a few guys coming over. We're just going to hang out and have a party there.
We're going to grill up and eat our dicks, and then one guy's going to eat us.
Yeah. That sounds like exactly what would happen in this movie.
But anyway, her response is basically, take your sister, which is weird.
Oh, 100% the fucking weirdest thing of like, oh, well, you're going to some party event thing where you want to hang out with people? Take your weird sister. And he's like,
I don't even think she'd want to go to that.
Why? He's like, because she needs to get out of the house.
Yeah. So then we have to find the sister. But she's out in the woods looking at her ghost grandma sitting in a ring of fire. And that's when the mom... that's when the mom finds her. The mom, of course, does not see ghost grandma sitting in the fire ring.
No. And is very upset with Charlie and takes her inside.
Mm-hmm.
But then is like, hey, you're going to go to this party. Doesn't even give her the option.
That's okay. No, you're going.
I don't want to go. Well, you're going.
You're definitely going because you have to learn about kids your own age. So go to this party.
There's
going to
be kids and you should go there.
It's such a weird decision because you can tell that the mom knows full well that Peter is lying. Like, she's just like, you're going to a fucking drinking party and shit, aren't you?
She's like, oh, I'm going to saddle you with your little sister as a way to make you confess that this isn't school barbecue, and he calls the bluff.
He calls the bluff, and she isn't willing to follow up on that. So off they go to a party. And so he walks into a party full of partying high school students with a shuffling, disheveled witch of a little girl who's just like, I don't want to be here. I hate this.
I hate everything, and I'm just going to, shuffle with my head down behind you.
Yeah, I'm
going
to stay within 2 or 3 feet of you. This is a horrible situation.
Yeah, and fucking he sees his crush there.
He also watches two women make a chocolate cake, which is the most hilarious shot you've ever seen. There's these two random high school students behind a big bar in a kitchen making a chocolate cake that are chopping a kingly level of walnuts.
Oh, just an entire chopping board's worth of walnuts.
Hundreds of walnuts. They spent $50. They went to the grocery store for this party and were like, all right, box of cake mix. That's $7. Great. Also, I need $56 worth of walnuts, please.
I'm going to make a cake that is, by volume, probably about 60% walnut.
That's my big plan here is to serve up a walnut flour-based cake. It's going to be extremely dry. You will cough when you eat it.
Look, this cake is mostly held together by walnut.
Yeah.
It's like the payday of cake if the outside was all walnuts.
Except instead of caramel in the middle as a glue, it's got foreshadowing.
Indeed. So we see the chopping of the walnuts go on. I don't know that he does.
He definitely does. That's the first. You have to establish that this kid's a dickhead. So he sees the walnuts, notes it, and then forgets about it because he's busy trying to score.
I think the camera notes it. I don't think he notes it.
That's fine. But anyway, he walks up to the girl with a terrible line, and she points out
his
terrible
like,
line.
Hey, man.
How's this party?
How's the party?
How's this party?
How's the party, man?
Do you want some weed? I have good weed.
I've got good weed. And she's like, yeah, all right,
well,
you big dumb idiot.
She sizes him up immediately as a good mark to steal weed from, effectively.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's like, yeah, come on upstairs with me. We'll find a quiet room and smoke the weed.
There's a bong up there.
Yeah. And then they go up there, and there was a bong and also all of her friends.
Great. Now give me your weed and get out.
Yeah, she's just been waiting for a dude to show up and try and smoke her out alone in a room. And power to her, let's be clear.
Oh, yeah, 100%. This kid is a huge goober, and the second he was like, I've got this bag of weed, she's like, great, thank you.
Thank you. You know who's going to enjoy that weed? The dudes I actually want to hook up with at a later date, because they're interesting and they're not slack-jawed. We gotta look at this kid's wet eyes for a lot of this movie.
Hey, I fucking love it.
He's
great.
He's well cast. I'm not saying that he's a problem. He's perfect for the role in the movie, which is as a wet-eyed loser.
And of course, his sister's like, no, you can't leave. And he's like, no, but I got to go get high with this girl I like. Just, stay here in this party, baby, draw something. I'm like, you are an awful brother.
Yeah, he is a terrible brother. But, you know, the movie more or less wants us to think that about him at this point. And finally, he resorts to telling her to go get cake.
Yeah, he's like, look, there's chocolate cake over there.
And she even fights that.
She's like, no, I don't know anybody here. They're not going to give me any cake.
And he's like, yeah, they will. Just stand there until cake is in your hands.
Just, it's a party. Everyone gets cake. Which seems weird, because there's like 50 kids here, and maybe a regular-sized cake.
And how many of them are even wanting cake? All of them are there to smoke out, drink, and score.
Oh, yeah. The fact that this is shown to be one of those standard movie high school parties, where it's just people kind of dancing, mostly drinking, and smoking and hanging out and like
and there's
making
like
out.
There's like 80 of them there, and it's clear that someone's parents made the mistake of leaving the house alone for a single night.
Oh yeah, and then someone decided to make a cake.
Yeah, not just a cake, but a rich in walnuts cake.
And not only
walnuts
that,
are brain food.
But I'm like, why did you make a cake, one cake for 80 people? And I could maybe understand if you're like, oh, this is a birthday party that got out of hand, and this is their birthday cake. But no, it was just a cake.
They were just making cake today. I like to assume that the people cooking the cake were also stoned.
They're like, dude, you know it would be fucking good?
Oh my god, I wonder if there's cake stuff in the pantry.
Oh yeah, it was the parents actually owned $50 worth of walnuts.
It's a walnut farm. That's what we've learned here.
What we've learned is this house is a walnut farm that loves cake mix.
Uh-huh, they've got two huge boxes of cake mix and just one of those Henry's barrels of Walmart. Henry's barrels of Walmart.
Welcome
come on
Henry's
down.
Henry's barrel of Walmart. Get your own Walmart straight from the barrel.
Every morning before sunup, you'll see old Henry out there
picking the Walmarts
and waxing them clean.
He gets them all shoved up, and then they're waxed clean.
I'm sorry. A big barrel of walnuts was also available.
Yes.
So the son's up in the room trying to, Peter is up in the room with the girl, still trying to impress a bunch of people who are clearly very disdainful of him. He's just their weed source now.
Yeah, they're like, oh, look, a weed man.
Oh, a rube has entered.
Congratulations. You are allowed to sit here because you have brought weed.
Yeah.
Thank you for your offering.
And then the daughter comes in and she's like, I can't breathe. And he's like,
oh, shit.
Why? No, because he can't just go, oh, shit. This is the slowest fucker on the planet. He's like, what? I can't.
Well, I mean, he's high.
He's high. I can't breathe. I feel like my throat's closing in.
My
I think
throat
I might have...
feels like it's getting bigger.
What? Why don't you drink some water? And then finally it gets through his dumb fucking head that he told the girl to eat peanut cake with walnuts in it.
Yeah, peanut cake with walnuts.
Yeah, and so he takes her to the car. Luckily, he is the only person who drove to this party because...
Oh, he is parked right out front
with
cars around.
No cars on either side of him. Classic Hollywood move.
Yep.
He got the only parking space in town. Lucky him.
Oh, everyone else just walked there.
Yeah, every single other kid walked there. But you can tell they had to walk a long way because the next shot is him driving through an endless desert. There is nothing behind him. There is nothing in front of him.
Oh, yeah. He straight has to come off of a dirt road to the actual road when he is leaving this party.
Yeah. And so whoever this house is, it's in the middle of fucking nowhere, or it's on the edge of town. But then he starts, if he's on the edge of town, it's the edge of town with no hospital in it, because he has to go on a 90-mile drive to the nearest hospital.
There, and I mean, when we say there is nothing in front or behind him, there is no lights, there's nothing. It is just empty road and darkness in all directions. Like, unless there is a giant, like, fucking mountain range in between where he currently is and where his city is, he is so far away from civilization.
Yeah, he has definitely gone the wrong way. Or the whole family lives in the only mountain in a huge desert, like in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't know where the fuck this is supposed to take place. Where it's supposed to take place is atmospheric town.
Yeah, they live in Oklahoma Mountain, the only mountain in Oklahoma.
They are just surrounded by atmosphere shots. That's what's here.
Yeah, it's just nothing but the sound of an orchestra playing hard, tense music through the trees. That kind of music that just
you
builds.
You look into the trees and there's an orchestra there going.
Scene cut.
And then we go to a different scene.
That's because that's the only kind of music this movie has in it.
Yeah, well, you know, someone watched The Witch and was like, yeah, that's good.
John, this movie is The Witch.
I disagree with you, but not very hard.
Let me just try this on the audience. Folks, what if there was a movie where the older sibling, just the older sibling, was well-meaning and tried hard to take, or didn't really try hard, but was at least well-meaning regarding his either crazy or removed from the movie early siblings. And then, by the end of the movie, evil powers have visited him and told him he's the son of Satan. Or that he could join Satan if he wanted to. Also, the only creepy thing in the movie is naked people hanging out in the woods. Also, the mom goes fucking crazy and the well-meaning dad can't do anything to stop her. Also, there's an animal attack. I mean, it's The Witch. This movie is The Witch.
It's not. There are similarities, a lot of very thematic and atmospheric similarities, especially.
The ending is identical. It's identical to two movies, actually.
Well, yes.
It is identical. We'll talk about that when we get there. Let's actually jump back instead of going into my "this movie is The Witch" speech.
I mean, he gets her in the car and she's freaking out. She can't breathe. He's going like 85 because they are apparently 100 miles from anything. And she rolls the window down to try and get some air. At the same time, there's a dead animal in the road.
Which there's no way that's not an accident, given the rest of this movie and what actually happens in it. Oh, by the way, throughout the course of this, she's been creepy and making that noise with her mouth.
Yeah, she's been a lot.
She's been making little clicks, just so you know, that in case you were worried that part of this movie didn't happen. Yeah, it does. Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah, you get a lot of mouth sound. It's fine.
Yeah. So they're driving down this highway, and all of a sudden, a dead deer in the road, and she's sticking her head out the window, and he's screaming at her not to, but then he sees the deer, and he swerves not to hit it, and a fucking telephone pole takes her head clean off.
Clean off.
Yep, and so Charlie's dead, and that's Charlie. That's a wrap on the character you thought was the main character in the film.
Yeah. The character that you thought was going to be like, oh, you're going to be possessed by the evil grandma, shit's going to happen, dies fairly quickly into this film.
I mean, let's be clear here. This is one of the coolest scenes in the movie. This is the big one-act twist. This is the reason we warned you to go see the movie instead. But when her head gets knocked off, you don't actually get to see it. You hear the noise of it. You see that shot of her face as something that's approaching her.
And the fucking job by the kid who's playing the brother is amazing in this scene.
Spotless. This is the best. If the movie ended here, this would be the best movie ever. So he pulls over with his hands just firmly glued to the wheel. He can't bring himself to turn around.
Oh yeah,
so
you see his eyes start to move towards the rearview mirror, and when he can see even just a glimpse of the body, he just snaps his eyes back forward.
Mm-hmm. His eyes start to fill up with tears, which then don't even drain away. They just recede back into his big, wet eyes. For a good 90 seconds, you just watch this kid trying to figure out what the hell he's going to do that he took his sister's head off.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome, very tense scene, and here is what he does. He drives home, parks the car, and goes to bed.
Yeah. It was one of those scenes where you're like, oh, yeah, he just straight had a traumatic break, and he's like, I cannot deal with this. My brain has shut down. A good night, sir.
Yeah. So he goes home and quietly goes to bed. He doesn't sleep. He just lies there until the next morning, which we know because we see him lying there all bloodshot and tired. And then we hear the mom going out to go to work and screaming her head off.
Oh, yeah. Ah, her head off.
Ah. Screaming her daughter's head clean off. And then, you know, we hear the mom screaming like crazy. And then we actually cut to a shot of Charlie's head lying in the dirt.
Yeah.
which is an amazingly nasty and gory shot. It's great effects. She's got her tongue lolling out the bottom. She's got
covered
her top,
in ants.
Covered in black ants, top row of teeth there. It's horrific.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, again, to their credit, no violin sting, no, like, trying to jump scare with this image. It just sort of goes to it, and they're like, hey, look at this.
This is what a 13-year-old girl's head looks like if it's covered in huge black ants.
You know, if it had been ripped off in the middle of the night, landed in dirt, and was covered in ants.
Yeah. It's a horrifying scene. And we don't really, for a long time, we don't really get a resolution on what happens to the son as a result of this. He just kind of continues along with his life. It's just ruled an accident. He doesn't need any count. He just goes back to school, it looks like.
Oh, that was so weird to me because we have the movie really hard switch to focused on the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the background of all of these shots, like when they're lowering her into the dirt at the funeral for her.
When they do the funeral like event itself, he's hiding behind panes of glass.
Oh yeah, and that was a gorgeous shot too.
Yeah.
Like this distorted view of his face through that you know, that glass that's sort of like yellow and textured.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see this weird distorted view of him just watching what's going on.
Yeah. And there's a whole thing about how he never really talks with anyone about it. It just sort of happens, and then they move on.
Yeah.
But the wife cannot move on. The mom freaks out harder than she's ever freaked out about anything. She is completely inconsolable, freaking out. She can't sleep in her own bed. She takes to sleeping in the treehouse that her daughter liked.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying, and so she has to set up like a heaters out there.
Well, especially because the heaters that are out there have this red light that's just glowing out of this treehouse, which... More great imagery.
Yeah, super good imagery. So basically, this is the huge break in the movie where all of a sudden it's a completely different movie.
Yeah, we start to transition into Act Two where you're like, okay, so it's not about the little girl and the grandma. What is this about? And that's when they throw you the, oh, it's actually about Charlie haunting the house.
Mm-hmm.
And you start getting things where like, oh, the son hears the noise.
Yeah, and he sees a vision of Charlie hovering in the corner of his room, and when he says her name, her head falls off and turns into a basketball. And basically, he starts being haunted by Charlie wherever he drives around and hears the click sound. He sees light flashes at his school that are reminiscent of things that she would do.
And same thing with the mom. She starts hearing that click. Mm-hmm. She can feel this presence around there. So the two of them are both having this very intense, I feel like, you know, we're being haunted. And of course, the father has none of this, which is why you get that, oh, this might just be unreliable narrator because of the hereditary thing. It could be these two just having the trauma of this death making them go over the edge.
Yeah, yeah. There's a point where you think, oh, okay, so this is going to be about the hereditary nature of insanity tracking these two people through down the family line. When Toni Collette tries to go back to grief counseling, because she went to one grief counseling session when her mom died, she drives back there but can't bring herself to go in and tries to drive away. She is flagged down by our other major character from the movie, Ann Dowd, shows up as Joan, who basically stops her from driving away and is like, oh, I you want to come in with me? My son died, and I know how hard this can be.
Look, I saw you last time you were here a couple months ago. How are you doing with your mom's death?
And she's like, oh, no, my daughter died in an accident.
Oh, goodness. My son and grandson died, and I know how that is. And
they both drowned.
Yeah.
We hear.
He was 7 years old, my grandson. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's terrible. So she gives Anne her number and is like, here, if you need to talk to anyone, if you need any like grief help or anything, if you're not going to go to the meetings, then at least lean on me.
Yeah, and she does. There's one scene where she goes to the house just for a regular chat, and we hear her. They ask her, "How are you dealing with a death?" And she's like, "I can't bring myself to deal with it in any way. How are you doing with your son?" Which is a really good question to ask.
Oh yeah,
and her reaction is insane. She's like, well, things have never been good with my son because, and again, let me stress, this is not my fault, she says. One time, I sleepwalk.
I haven't been sleepwalking in years, but I did sleepwalk.
So she unfolds this whole thing in layers. One time, while sleepwalking, she poured paint thinner all over her sleeping
son.
She's
like, oh, I woke up and there was paint thinner all over my son and daughter back when they shared a room.
Mm-hmm.
And there was paint thinner all over me. Now, I had a box of matches, and you're like,
Oh, and then I lit one of the matches. And it just keeps going on. She just keeps getting worse and worse, but she keeps going,
I woke up because of the match lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put it out right away.
But he's just been holding that over me ever since. I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, no shit. If I woke up covered in paint thinner and my mom had a lit match, I'd be like, well.
We're going to hold this over you. You're going to sleep with a seatbelt.
I'm going to go ahead and lock my door at night from the inside.
Oh, quit being such a baby. Yeah, I only tried to burn you to death once.
But yeah, the fact that there's that disconnect between the two of them, you're like, okay, that really makes it clear why there was, when he went to ask to go to the party, that odd dynamic between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they haven't been, and it's at the point where his distrust of her has caused her to dislike him.
Yeah.
Like, she actually hates her son. She doesn't really like having him around, and she feels like it's unfair that he's constantly lording it over her with this whole, I tried to kill him once. And it's funny because he never mentions it, ever, in the whole movie.
It's very much seems like all of this is in her head for, oh, you keep blaming me for things, and you're so smug about whatever. I'm like, we never get that in the film at all.
No, there is one scene where he kind of reacts to her in a way that I... Anyway, things keep getting worse throughout the house. Everyone's seeing horrible visions. There's various things that haunt both the mother and the son for quite a long time. And we eventually come to a point where there... Or she even does another sleepwalking incident.
Yeah. Thing is, I feel like that one...
I have no idea where we are in the course of the film at this point. This is the point where the movie devolves into creepy shit happens.
Oh yeah, it's just, this is creepy nonsense is going on in the house for both of these characters.
And it's kind of like they're establishing the rules. It's like they're saying, here's some things that you learn. For example, there's a point, and this happens a little later in the film, she finds one of Charlie's books in Charlie's room, but it's open and it's writing itself.
Oh, that's after the seance.
Yeah, it's after the seance, so we should skip that.
But before that, though, there's a point where... Actually, I don't even know if that's before or after, but I feel like it was before. There's a point where she wakes up and sees ants.
Yeah, she sees ants, so she follows them. And
there's a trail of ants going to her son's room, and he is covered in all of these ants.
And they're coming out of his mouth and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, she freaks out, and then the ants go away, and the son's like, Mom, you're sleepwalking again.
Why are you in my room? Why do you always sleepwalk to my room?
And
she's like, what? I would never hurt you. Gah.
I didn't want to have you.
That's right. That's where they have that horrible conversation.
Yeah, it was like, I didn't want to have you. I felt pressured to have you. I wanted to have a miscarriage, so I did everything they told me not to do.
Yeah, and I still had you, and now I actually like you, and I want you around.
It's like, oh, I love you, and I'm glad that you didn't die, but you can tell it was like, oh, this is... The reason that she had this kid is because of her mom.
Well, and a lot of it is that the words are coming out of her whether she wants them to or not.
Oh, yeah. She keeps, covering her mouth, and every time she moves her hand, she says these horrible things.
Yeah, and the son's just freaking out. He's like, why are you telling me this? And he's, pretty justifiably so.
Yeah, but then she wakes up, and that was all a dream, too. And you're like, quit doing layers of dumb dreams.
Yeah, too many dreams. And also, there's the one, I think my favorite part in this whole sequence is the dinner.
Oh, yeah. The dinner scene where...
The mom's starting to lose her mind, so she's upstairs just painting, and she is painting the stupidest thing ever. She is making a model of the son killing the daughter.
Oh, yeah. She's got a model scene of the car next to the light pole and her daughter's head on the ground.
And, Gabriel Byrne comes in, and he's like, what the hell? Are you seriously making that? What's going to happen when your son sees that?
Oh, yeah. She's like, do not fucking show your kid that.
And
that
she's
will
like,
fuck him up.
She's like, what? It's a neutral view of the accident.
That shouldn't have any effect on him. I'm like, all right, well, you've lost it.
Yeah, she's lost her goddamn mind. But he's like, anyway, come down to dinner. And she's like, yeah, I'm making dinner. And he's like, it's 8 p.m. I made dinner. Come down or don't. I don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
And he walks off, and then she shows up at dinner, and we have the most tense scene in the movie. And it's my favorite part of the movie, to be honest. Has nothing to do with hauntings or whatever. It's just Toni Collette kind of laughs when her son is nice to the dad, because she's sneering at him, basically.
Yeah.
Dad, because the son just goes, hey, Dad, this is a good dinner. And he's like, I'm glad, son. I'm glad you like it. And the wife goes, and he's like, what, Mom? Did you want to say something?
Did you have something to say, Mother?
Yeah. Because he can't live like this anymore, so he's decided to poke the bear.
Oh, yeah, because knowing that they haven't talked about this, for his part, he has to be sitting there going, they blame me. They haven't said anything, but they 100% blame me for this.
I need to hear them hear her blame me at some point. We need to get this. We need to twist the release valve on this thing.
Yeah.
So she stands up and starts yelling at him about how he killed the daughter. And he's like, and now there's nothing you can do. And the worst part is you've never apologized for it. And I'm like, that's not, you got to show me not apologizing movie. I don't know how long it's been since the daughter died. You've given us nothing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this could be like 4 days later. This could be months later. I don't really
know. It has to be months later because he's back in school. And you know, you, for example, the fact that he's 17 and he accidentally killed a kid, we never see any legal shit.
Oh, no, nothing like that. We don't see him see a counselor.
Yeah.
Nothing happens.
Nothing. He just goes to school the next morning, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
But so she's just screaming at him about how no one in the world takes personal responsibility for anything.
But also, again, brings up the, like, you keep lording it over me. And
mm-hmm. You're always so fucking smug.
Yeah, you just sneering at me, and you'll never let me live anything down.
Yeah, and the son's just like, weirdly, this is the part I was talking about where the son straight up does exactly what she's saying. He takes all this yelling at her, just sort of internalizes it, looks back at his dinner, and then goes, you know, it's also your fault that she's dead.
You made her go to that party. And
I didn't want her to go. She didn't want to go. You made her go.
Why did you make her go?
And then she's like, she flips out completely. And at that point, Gabriel Byrne, the dad, shuts it down and says, get out of here, both of you. We're not doing this.
No more.
None of this. And they both stomp off. And I think right after that is where we have the scene where she sees him with ants all over him. And that, so I think those two things happen. But the scene of Toni Collette breaking down and screaming at this 17-year-old stoner is really good.
Oh, yeah.
It's an awesome scene. But then this is where the movie finally, she goes and looks through her mom's stuff. And her mom's stuff has some photo albums, and she likes to look through those, whatever. But then a book called Understanding Spiritualism comes
in. Well, I mean, she sees that at the beginning when she's going through her mom's stuff.
I know, but we need to talk about the fact that this movie is just about fucking Satan. It's got nothing to do with people being insane.
Well, it's because she meets Joan again outside of an art store, and Joan's like, I met a medium, and the medium let me contact my dead grandson.
Have you ever heard of spiritualism? And she's like, oh, god damn it. And I'm like, oh, god damn it.
Yeah.
And John was like, oh, god damn it.
Oh, yeah. It's the beginning of the third act. You're like, oh, okay, hold on.
Seances.
If this is just going to be a way to up the tension for the daughter haunting, I was like, all right, fine, whatever, sure. This is just a way to make it so that instead of it, this is a transition from, we are going to go from, oh, this is just unreliable narrator, I'm going crazy, to, oh no, now creepy shit is going to happen where, like, even the dad can see it, and we go to, it's an actual haunting.
Yeah.
So they go back to Joan's place, and she's like, here's the seance thing I'm going to do. And
it's these words, which, incidentally, you've seen carved all over your house all the way through the course of this movie.
And, I'm going to talk to my little baby boy. And
this is the thing. This bothered me. So she does a standard seance. They put their hands on a cup. She asks the son to move the cup. The son moves the cup. The way she says it is, if you can hear me and you are here and you want to talk to us, move the cup to the left. If you don't want to talk to us, move the cup to the right. And I'm like, who's right? Who's right?
Well,
what are we, stage right? What are you talking about, Aunt Dowd?
Oh, if it's yes to the left and no to the right.
Who's right? You don't know where the ghost is.
Is the ghost facing you? Is it a ghost face killer?
This is going to be a problem for you when the cup moves to the left and you're like, he wants to talk, but he moved it to the right because he's facing you. He's not standing where you're standing. That's creepy. Ghosts don't do that.
Yeah.
They like to stand adjacent to you so they can look at your butts.
Yeah, the left-right thing was very, come on, man.
I don't know why I noticed it so hard, but the first thing I was like, hey, wait a
minute. No, I did that too. I was like, wait a minute, who's left and right? Like, are you look? Because fucking Toni Collette is sitting to the left of her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what about her left and right?
Yeah.
What if you're like, oh, you moved the cup forward. Well, no, that was her left.
What actually happened was the cup got pulled away from both of them. It kind of went away from both of them towards the center of the table. So even if the kid heard their instructions, he still didn't do anything that made any sense to what...
The first instructions were, move the cup if you're here.
Yeah,
and then
all.
It was yes or no is left and right.
Yeah. But all the cup did at that point was go shoomph. But then she gets out a chalkboard and the kid writes, I love you, Grandma.
Yeah.
On the cup. Which, to me, that was the point where I knew that Joni was bullshit. Because she's doing things that mediums do. Mediums are always like, where's the kid? The kid is definitely in heaven. And he loves you. And he's very happy. And he's with all of his pets. Mediums never tell you that anyone you know is in hell. You won't pay them if they tell you that. So they go like, oh, everyone's super happy. Your drowned grandson is great. And everyone loves him. And he loves you. And love,
well,
love, love.
I mean, at that point, the chalk moving by itself writing, I love you, Grandma. You're like, all right, so there's some spirit shit going
on. Yeah, but at that point, I knew that it wasn't the spirit of a seven-year-old doing that. I knew it was Joni fucking around.
Ah.
I figured that was the point where I knew that she was one of the witches from this movie that is the witch. Because I was like, oh, she's just doing medium shit. She just needs this other lady to buy in.
And she hands Anne this sheet of paper that's like, here, it's a bunch of words you don't understand, and you need to do this ritual.
And here's the spell here's the candle that does this. Please take it. Which is another reason I knew she was bullshit right away. I was like, you wouldn't give away the candle that lets you talk to your dead grandson.
Oh, you just need a candle.
She doesn't know that. She's only tried it with the one. If I was able to speak and summon and speak to the dead, I'd pretty much keep all the shit involved with it until I managed to prove it to CNN.
So she's like, yeah, just go home and do this ritual, and then you're going to have your daughter back. You'll be able to talk to her.
Yeah, and of course, at this point, the mom is still like, no, I'm not doing that. That's crazy. Everything I just saw is crazy. I need to get out of here. I don't want to be a part of this. No, leave me alone. But she still takes all the stuff home. So she goes home, has a horrifying vision of some kind in bed. I think this is the one where the vision is of her trying to pull her son's head off, or maybe that's the one that actually happens.
That's the one when he sees Charlie.
He sees Charlie, her head falls off, and then hands spring out from behind his bed, which, by the way, is pressed up against the wall.
Yeah.
And start trying to pull his head off. Then someone wakes up, and he's looking at his mom in the room.
Tony Collette in there, Anne, is shaking him, and he's like, why did you try and pull my head off? She's like, no, I just got here because you were screaming.
Yeah. But she's like, anyway, you need to come with me. You need to come with me right now. You need to come with me because we're doing a thing. And this is the point where she's gone full on, I can't explain myself because I'm too fucking crazy.
Well, yeah, she's already done the ritual.
Yeah.
And is like, hey, there's a scene where basically you can see a light in a bathroom and hear her doing these weird words.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, she's done the ritual. She's like, oh, no, I need you to come with me. Go downstairs.
My husband,
follow me because I'm
begging
going
you.
Real crazy.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember where this fits in with a couple other things. First of all, we didn't mention that Gabriel Byrne got a phone call at one point from the funeral home that the grandmother's grave had been desecrated.
Yes.
And I don't remember when this also links to the fact that the grandmother's corpse is in the attic.
Much later.
Okay. So they try to do this whole the seance thing. And the son is completely willing. Peter is completely willing to go along with it because this is the first time his mother's reached out to him in any way other than to shriek at him.
Also, because he's been having these weird visions and nonsense, he's like, yes, I am willing to believe that I am being haunted.
But here's
makes perfect sense to me.
The thing is, she's like, oh my gosh, this little girl is in the room. Charlie's in the room and we can contact her. And there's no point where he's like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk to a person I killed. Wouldn't that be a thing you'd think? If you accidentally knocked your sister's head off, would your first hope be like, well, let's see what she thinks about that?
Well, no.
Hey, Charlie, how you doing?
I want to apologize.
To a ghost? I don't want to apologize. I mean, I do. I feel bad and all. But I'll do it through generic prayer and to the darkness, thank you. I will not summon a spirit of her to apologize to it because she'll do spirit nonsense.
Well, that's you.
That's me being logical. I guess it's the same problem I have with where I was like, oh, you're a witch, Joni. You were definitely a witch. Where why didn't you shoot like some cell phone video of you summoning your dead grandson and post that on fucking YouTube and shit? Where's that part? Because this whole movie is very... very internet friendly. There's a whole part where they're talking about Facebook statuses. But no, it's just one of those movies where cell phones just, you know, aren't mentioned.
Well, she doesn't need to. If she's not like, oh, what I want to do is get everyone involved in the fact that I'm talking to my dead grandson.
I don't think there's any personal revelation that could possibly occur to me, like on a spiritual level or otherwise, where I would not immediately think about how I could monetize it.
Well, I also believe that is you.
Maybe it's me, but if one of my dead family members was like, Jeff, I can talk to you, I wouldn't be like, oh my god, my dead great uncle, please tell me about the American First World War, participation in the First World War. I'd be like, stay right where you are till I have my camera.
See, and that's very you. I think you are looking at this through Jeff colored glasses.
Those are the only colored glasses I have. Anyway, they try the seance and it kind of...
Well, it works.
It works, but it doesn't work the way they want it to.
Well, it freaks Peter out. He starts, like, just crying and freaking out because things are happening.
A window breaks and then the fire does, like, the fire and the candle jets up really hard and then it disappears and then it comes back up again.
It has the you know, cup moves, the same thing.
All this stuff happens. The husband is very much in the vein of the husband in this movie is the I will never humor you no matter what guy. Like, the son has to beg the dad to humor the mom in that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Up until that, because otherwise, in every other scene where she's like, please come with me, please just do the thing I want you to do, and he's like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not, why would I, no.
Yeah.
No, because he'd be the perfect person to make my point for me in that point. Why would Charlie want to, why would Peter want to talk to Charlie? He's totally terrified of this situation. Well, that's the last person he wants to talk to.
Again, it very much could be he wants to apologize to her.
In what situation does this boy, who has been pointed out previously in the movie for never apologizing for anything in his entire life ever, would he suddenly want to apologize to a ghost?
That's from the mother's point of view.
We also never see him apologize for anything.
That's true, but he doesn't really have anything else to apologize for, and he only wants to apologize to her, not to the mother.
I guess that's fair. My thought was, as soon as he was freaking out about it, I was like, of course he's freaking out about it. He's summoning his murder victim. Or his manslaughter victim, I guess. That's the last person I'd try to summon.
Yeah, man, you just don't get it. You just don't get how it's happening here.
You think I'm too kind of psychopathic to apologize to people I might have murdered?
Yes.
All right, let me just issue a blanket apology at this time to anyone I might have murdered or come to be or caused
or
the death of.
Will murder in the future. Definitely will murder
I'm
in the
very
future.
Sorry. I also will further apologize that I am not going to summon you to apologize in person because that's shit creepy.
Fair. Now, the thing I had from this scene is much more, as you say, the dad this whole time has been like, stop going crazy, please get your shit together. And the second they go and do this seance and a cup moves by itself, a window breaks, and fire bursts out of a candle, and he like looks under the table, there's nothing down there. At that point, you'd think he would go, oh shit,
all right,
oh shit, there's a ghost here.
Instead, what he does is eat some sleeping pills and go to bed on the couch.
He's like, oh, you know what I need to do is not watch my crazy wife while she does weird things.
So he said he can't sleep near her because he's too mad at her for how she yelled at the son, and also because she's fucking crazy. And his solution to this problem, even though he's terrified for the life of his son, is to leave the two of them alone upstairs and sleep on the couch with a bunch of sleeping pills and whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
His big solution is, nope, I'm out. Peace.
Again, this fucking act three, everything falls apart. The dad up until this point has been like, I want to take care of my son. How do you think he's going to feel? What's going on? And then the second that we get to a point where either the mother has gone full on over the edge crazy, or there is a ghost, he's like, well, time to go downstairs and take sleeping pills.
I'm checking out. Thank you so much for involving me up until this point.
It's time for the third act, and everyone turns real fucking stupid.
Just nonsense is going to happen, and here comes the big pile-on of nonsense. So the mom, while crazy, goes to the daughter's room. Inside the daughter's room, there's a little book that she used to draw pictures in. It's open, and the pages are turning, and it's being drawn in randomly, just by the air. The air is using a black charcoal thing to draw on it. When she looks in it, it's just a bunch of pictures of Peter, Peter being sad with his eyes drawn out, like crossed out.
She ends up, at this point, is when she goes into the attic and finds the body of her mom that is headless?
Yeah, the headless body of her mom is in the attic with some lit candles and some weird runes carved on the walls, which she has seen before in the Big Book of Spiritualism. She rushes to the Big Book of Spiritualism in her mom's old stuff, and wouldn't you know it, when she flips it open, there's a letter from her mom apologizing to her for all the shit that's about to happen, but that she'll understand it'll all be better after it all happens, and also the spell that we're seeing, which is the summoning of the god of mischief, Paimon.
Oh, Paimon. That's right, it's Paimon, and he brings along his friend, Simple Simon, who he met.
So Paimon is portrayed as sort of a fat devil riding a weird goat camel hippo thing, and he's described as the god of mischief, and here are the two things that are highlighted on the page. He is the god of mischief, and he can be invited into the world by a coven, and also he prefers a male host because he himself is presented as a male when he is a demon.
Yeah.
Then she turns the page, and there is a big picture of a fat idiot who is drunk sitting on a large pile of gold coins with the headline underneath it, Gold for the Conjurer.
Yeah.
So she's like, ah, so if you summon this Paimon guy, you get riches.
Yeah, riches for the Conjurer. And then she flips through the grandma's picture book. And she finds, oh, no, Joan, this person that gave me a weird ritual that I just did without thinking about it, was also in all of these pictures with my mom. Oh, she was part of the whole thing.
She was one of the Coven of Witches. So at this point, she goes to wake up everybody in the house to kind of... She wakes up the husband. She's like, you need to go upstairs and see what's happening.
Go into the attic.
Go in the, which, again, she's not like, there's a headless body in the attic and a rune carved in it. She's
I
like,
need you to trust me and go into the attic.
Just go into the attic. I need you to look at the thing that's in the attic. Go in there and look at the thing in the attic. What's the thing in the attic? No time. You have to go in there. You have to go into the attic, which I have closed, and I need you to open again. I need you to use that thing you used to open the attic to go into the attic to, again, see the thing, which I did not have time to explain to you. Please, 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 go and look at the thing. It's a body. It's a dead body. Please go look at the dead body in the attic. You could have just said that.
Yep, and he goes up there, sees the dead body, and is like, oh, Jesus, it was you.
Oh, yes.
You dug up the grave. You put your fucking grandma's body up there and took the head off.
You're fucking
nuts. What
is
wrong with you?
This is you being fucking nuts. And she's like, no, you don't understand. There's this book. And you see, the one time I tried to put the book into the fire and burn the book because the book is connected to the daughter, my arm caught on fire. You were in the room. You were asleep because of sleeping pills. I put the book into the fire and it lit my arm on fire. So I took the book out of the fire. We need to burn the book. It's going to burn me if I put it in the fire because that's what it did last time. I'm going to cover it with paint thinner and you're going to throw it in the fire and that'll burn me alive and kill the ghost of our daughter and everything will be fine. Everything will be fine. And he's like, what is any of this? And as the audience, you're also like, what is any of that? What?
Yeah, she hands him the book covered in this fucking paint thinner and is like, just throw it in there. Just do this one thing for me.
You have to kill
me. Throw it in the fire.
It'll kill me, but I love you. You're the love of my life. And he's like, no.
I'm not doing
this. I'm done. I'm peace. So she takes
the book.
I'm going
to go get my kid and we're going to leave. Goodbye.
So she takes the book, throws it into the fire, and immediately, and with practically a cartoon trombone sound effect, Gabriel Byrne catches on fire and dies. Which, okay, just to be clear, this is a scene that happened previously in the movie. She puts the book into the fire, she catches on fire.
Yeah, and I mean not like violently, it just, as fire started going along the book, fire started moving along her arm.
Yes.
She put the book out and the fire went out on her arm.
Now, again, when she did that, Gabriel Byrne was already in the room. He was asleep on the couch behind her. She was worried about waking him up even. In this scene, she tries to get him to throw the book into the fire because that would cause her to catch on fire and die, she thinks, because she's seen that happen once.
Oh, yeah. And she also used this, her daughter's drawing book,
mm-hmm.
as the sort of focus item when she did the ritual before.
So she thinks that if Gabriel Byrne throws the book into the fire, that she'll catch on fire and die. She can't do this herself because she's too afraid to kill herself.
Yeah, but she does think, because this was the focus item in the ritual, if we burn that, then probably everything should end.
Okay, so here's the thing we know. Her putting the book into the fire causes her to catch on fire. So she gives the book to Gabriel Byrne. If Gabriel Byrne throws the book in the fire, one of two things can happen. Either she's right and she's directly linked to the book and she catches on fire, or she's wrong and whoever puts the book in fire catches on fire and he catches on fire. He won't do it. He refuses to do it. She takes the book, throws it in the fire. He catches on fire. The only thing that is not a logical potential outgrowth of what's happening.
Yes.
If you throw the book in the fire, you catch on fire is one of the potential rules. Or the book is linked to her, so if it burns, she does, is the other one. Instead, the only thing that couldn't possibly happen does.
Yeah, at that point, all rules break down, and the rest of the movie is wall-to-wall dumb bullshit that they just thought they wanted to add at the end.
Mm-hmm.
At this point,
the son has knocked himself unconscious at school, and we forgot to mention that.
Oh, yeah. He freaks out, like,
he gets
sort of gets possessed and knocks his head into the table.
Yeah, he raises his hand in a weird symbol shape and then bashes his face against the table until he's unconscious briefly, and when he wakes up, he's screaming. He's broken his own nose.
Yeah.
Or Paimon has broken his nose, probably, because it's clear at this point that Paimon is supposed to go into him, and that's the whole point. When he gets back, he's unconscious in his room, so he doesn't hear his dad burn to death downstairs. When he wakes up, there's just ghost things happening. It's just
the mom is just running around.
And
we see like a blouse go flying in the background without really being able to see who's in it. Just like white moves.
Yeah, and you see he looks outside and he sees that the mom has the heaters have been turned on in the treehouse, and so he's like, okay, my mom is outside. But then there's like ghost stuff happening behind him everywhere he goes.
And he is walking through the house and he's like, Mom, Dad, what's going on? He does not turn on a single light, or even attempt to turn on a light.
And it's funny because
I wake up in the middle of the night and no lights are on and I'm trying to find someone, my first thought isn't, well, I'll just stumble around in the dark saying, hey, Mom and Dad, until something happens.
Well, I think that might just be you, John. I think that might be your John-colored glasses. I don't turn the lights on in the house because I might wake my daughter up.
I don't turn the lights on in the house ever. You see, I've got perfect night vision.
You see, John, most people, like me and everyone else that I am thinking of, who's also me, we don't bother turning the lights on at night because that's expensive.
That's just money down the drain.
All we do is go
also,
out.
Also, don't you touch that thermostat.
Yeah, you touch that dial.
Now
I'm
that
a,
you
I'm
have
a
become
dad.
A dad.
Yeah. Don't you fucking touch that thermostat. I've already had the thermostat conversation. I actually have. I've been like, please use space heaters. They're cheaper. but anyway, and also they don't heat up my room, which I was hating.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, you're right. He goes wandering through a dark house past a number of conspicuous light switches, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Just, like, goes into a room to look in there, and the light switches, like, he puts his hand on the door frame, light switch inches away, and he's not going to go like, oh, let me flip this and see if anyone's in here. He's just like, huh? Mom?
And this is also the point where we finally start seeing the true villains of this movie. Smiling naked people, filmed through a gray filter, hiding in closets and stuff.
Yeah.
So many smiling naked people, because this movie is The Witch.
He goes downstairs. Well, no, that's way more insidious than it is The Witch, is the smiling, weird, naked people.
The Witch's villains were also naked witch women.
Well.
Hanging out in the woods, which, by the way, the last shot you see of these naked people before we get to... Oh my God, the end. Them three of them standing out in the woods smiling.
Yeah.
Doing a see no dick, hear no dick situation with their hands.
It's good. I hate hearing the dick. But he goes downstairs and finds his dad burnt.
And right from the beginning, you can tell every time they do a shot in this movie that's a one quarter where the character's slightly off to the left or right, that you should just be looking at the background.
Well, yeah. And his mom is straight up exorcist. Crawled up onto the ceiling.
Yeah, so we change focus briefly so we can see her back there for people who didn't already notice that the cross beams behind him were made of woman.
Yeah.
And then cut back to his focus, and when he turns around, she's gone, but then she drops to the ground and just starts straight up chasing him. And at this point, all I can think is, what is happening? Okay, so let's break it down. We know at this point that the whole point of this movie is that we need to get the spirit of Paimon into him. And one of the things we passed by is that the daughter was always the grandma's favorite because the grandma was estranged when the son was born.
Yeah, she wouldn't let the grandma anywhere near her son.
Yes, but when the daughter was born, she had relented and let the grandmother into her life, who rewarded her for letting her back into her life by breastfeeding her granddaughter, whether the daughter wanted it or not.
Yeah.
We even see, just to confirm that this was happening, a miniature that the mom has made of her mom wandering around with her boob out near the baby.
Yeah.
Let me tell you right now, if my mom tried to breastfeed my baby, I would be like, nope, get out. You're done. We're done here. Go die in the go out into the part of the village that is the desert part of the village and die out there. You are not allowed to do this. But it turns out that the grandmother was infested with Paimon bacteria or whatever, and so she has breastfed it into the wrong gender because that was her only option. And now that Charlie is dead, Paimon's spirit is floating around and needs a dude to be in. And I guess he can only go into the dude when the dude is sufficiently scared or something. We don't even know what the criteria is.
I have no idea. So I'm just going to finish this up, and then we're going to have a big long conversation about this. So at the end, the mom chases him, does a lot of crazy.
I want to know what would happen if she caught him. Like, if she caught him, would the movie end at that point? She's fucking nuts. But
so
go ahead.
He's up in the attic. He sees that there's like a circle with his picture in it. Sees his mom sawing her own head off as she floats in the air.
We also see her trying to beat her way into the attic with her head.
Yeah, just crazy ghost stuff happens. He jumps out the window.
This is great, though, because he sees his mom floating in the air in front of him, using like a little
piano wire
to cut her own head off. Noise. And he just looks at her for a while, but then he finally decides to look away from his mom. He sees three naked people, and he's like, nope, that's my limit.
There we go.
That's all I needed, thank you.
And I was fine with a floating mother cutting her own head off, but
yeah.
Three naked people.
Oh, hard pass.
I gotta jump out the window.
So he jumps out the glass window of the third story attic of his house and lands in a flower bed, and then the spirit of Paimon just kind of floats out of wherever.
Light comes, and the same sort of light effect we've seen.
Actually, it's a really cool light effect, but
That's been going on in this movie, just kind of like goes into his back and spreads out through him.
Yeah.
He wakes up, follows the headless body of his mom that floats into the treehouse. He goes up there. And then
passing
a
bunch of naked people in the woods.
We get the end of Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, we get the end of Rosemary's Baby mixed with the ending of, you guessed it, The Witch.
He goes up there and they're like, oh, you're now Paimon.
It's pretty much everyone you've seen throughout the course.
Yeah, it's Joan and a bunch of the people from the...
There's people from his school.
People from the funeral for the grandma.
There's a his headless mom. There's a couple different headless people.
Yeah, there's the headless mom and the headless grandma body there.
And so he gets up in there, and at this point he's switched from insanely scared to just serene. So he's just standing
there
looking.
He's just walking slack-jawed around like,
He's not quite serene, because the actor is very good at playing I'm a dumb stoner, and so that's just what he looks like. He's like,
But they refer to him as, they're like, hey, Charlie, don't be afraid. You're Paimon, and you're now, like, one of the ten...
Eight. You're one of the eight lords of hell. We looked to the northwest and invited you, and you came. You are now Paimon. You will reward us with control over all men as we grant our control over us to you.
Yeah.
Which, that's not a good deal. Oh, yes, I would love to trade eight dead people to give you mind control over everyone on Earth. But incidentally, it's probably Joan who's talking, but you never see anyone talk. Instead, just like the ending of The Witch, a disembodied voice just pops up and is like, hey, Charlie, devil stuff. You're the devil. You're Paimon. You have Paimon powers. And it's just, and then she puts a crown on his head.
And then they all go, praise Paimon, and just like praise Satan at the end of Rosemary's Baby.
Yep. And then just at the point where the movie is crescendoed into too much bullshit, it needs to explain everything to us, the director shows us his dick and ends the film.
Like, just film ends with a pullback shot of this fucking treehouse and everyone in it, and Peter, who is now Charlie, who is also Paimon, is just standing there staring off into the distance, mm-hmm. wearing a weird plastic crown.
Oh, and looking at a scarecrow with a crown on it.
Yeah.
Just a whole bunch of shit. And then the movie just ends and it plays that. I don't remember that song.
What were you doing? Owner of a Lonely Heart?
Owner of a Lonely Heart is the ending. No, I don't know any lyrics of the song, but I did recognize when they started playing. It was some 60s folk piece number that ends the movie. And that's it. That's just the end, right? Oh, hail Paimon.
Yeah. Fucking the third act of this movie.
It's just ridiculous bullshit nonsense that obeys no rules. There's no internal consistency to it. The movie spends a whole bunch of time wheel spinning with setting up the logic, the pieces, the internal consistency of this universe, the haunting, what's actually happening. And then the last act is just like, nah, none of that. We'll use the same pieces to play a different game.
As we said, the whole time they're doing this, it's either you're crazy or you're being haunted. And even when it gets to the point where it's like late in the second act, they're like, oh, yeah, we switched up. It's not haunted from the grandma. It's haunted from this kid. You might even think, oh, well, maybe it's just some evil spirit that she accidentally summoned instead of the kid. We're going to do a full Insidious thing.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of that, they're just like, oh, hey, you know how we never really mentioned anything about, like, Satanism and nothing about Charlie seemed like it would be weird with Paimon or nonsense like that? Anyway, here's that. And all of our rules go out the window, and we're just going to do weird, like, granted, filmed well, like, mm-hmm. the mother sort of clinging to the ceiling, banging her head against the trap door to the attic when he goes up there. Very creepy, very well done scene, but it makes no fucking sense, because you're like, okay, did the mom get possessed by Paimon? What the fuck happened?
There's a point where when she accidentally lights Gabriel Byrne on fire, where she's screaming and looking at him in abject terror because her husband's dying, where she suddenly goes slack-jawed and sort of like, oh, I expected this would happen. Like, her face just goes to, yeah, okay, that's right. So I think at that exact moment, she's being possessed by Paimon, because at that point, after that, she sticks to ceilings and floating. She turns into fucking Rosemary, or into the Exorcist kid.
But
Reagan.
What is the fucking rules here on what Paimon can or can't do? If he can just be like, oh, I just possessed the mom, why doesn't he just possess Peter if he wants someone? Why doesn't he fucking possess Gabriel Byrne?
It really does seem like he can only possess people when they're absolutely 100% terrified, or when he's been breastfed into them. Those are his two options. He can either get breastfed into them, or because it's a point where she's at her absolute worst, where she's screaming because her husband's on fire, that she gets possessed. And it's the scene where Peter is so scared that he jumps out of a third story window that he gets possessed.
But there's nothing in here about that. And also, if there was a rule where it was like, oh yeah, it has to be like the grandmother summoned it, so it has to be on her line. That's why we don't go to Gabriel Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be some kind of ritual, I could see. Because you could go, oh, the grandmother did a ritual. Like, maybe it wasn't even just the breastfeeding thing. Maybe she just did a ritual while she was in the house.
Or maybe the ritual that summons
when we see
Charlie is actually the ritual that summons Paimon.
Well, I was going to say, we see in the grandmother's room the one time we go in there, she does have that weird, like, triangle thing.
Yeah, the triangle thing which points towards the person you want to die or you want Paimon to go into or something.
So,
and you put the picture of them in it.
So I'm like, it might not have just been breastfeeding puts Paimon into her. It could have just been her being like, I want to take care of the vessel that is my weird Satan thing is going to go into. And she did the ritual there. Okay, sure. Let's say when he goes up into the attic, you also see that same triangle with a picture of Peter in there and there's candles. Okay, they did the same ritual for him and Paimon gets to go into him.
Can we talk about how
what happened with the mom? Why does she get to be possessed and cut her own head off?
I assume it's because at that point, the only person who's vulnerable to Paimon possession is her. She's the one who most recently cast any kind of ritual at all, so maybe it's close enough. She sees her husband dying, and when she's at her absolute lowest, Paimon goes into him. The problem is that Paimon does stuff in her that makes no sense, because you never see the little kid floating around. There's no evidence that the grandmother ever sawed her own head off. I mean, she doesn't have a head in the movie, so maybe she did. But
I also want to touch briefly on that as well of, what's the point of all these heads going off? I know Charlie got her head knocked off, but the grandma, when she died, didn't have that happen. But when they find the body, the head is gone.
So maybe it wasn't just enough that she had nurtured through breast milk the daughter, but also Paimon was still stuck in her until her head got popped loose. Maybe you have to pop a head loose for Paimon to go into someone. Because that's definitely what's happening with the mom cutting her own head off at the end. She's opening up the cork of her own head to release Paimon so he can go into the sun.
Okay,
because
is the grandmother's head off?
Because Paimon was in the grandmother until someone dug up her grave and cut her head off to let Paimon out.
Wow.
Okay, I think I'm actually starting to put this together. I don't want you to take this as an endorsement. But basically the idea is that you need to cut your head off for Paimon to get out of you. So when the grandmother dies, Paimon's in there. And a lot of the people at the funeral know, which is why they all have weird knowing smiles, but they have to wait for the funeral. And then after the funeral, the body is buried, and then they dig her up, cut her head off, Paimon floats out, goes to the little kid, and then she sees the ghost of the grandma for reasons that will never be explained. She's briefly Paimon, very briefly, maybe like a day of being Paimon, before she gets her own head chopped loose, which is definitely Paimon doing that, because he hates being in ladies. Then okay. Paimon floats around at random for...
Except... Nothing happens with Charlie to make you think that maybe Paimon is possessing this kid.
Well, except for the her ghostly abilities to write stuff and her...
What are you talking about?
She draws in her own drawing style after she dies.
No, I'm saying while Charlie is alive, there is nothing to say that she has been possessed by Paimon.
Well, she can see ghosts.
Everyone sees ghosts in this.
So... No, you're right. There's nothing to suggest that Charlie was ever actually any amount of Paimon.
Like, right before she gets her head knocked off, if you're whole, you have to have the head knocked loose in order to get Paimon out. She's just being a weird, awkward kid that then has some cake.
Can we also talk about how Paimon is a terrible devil? Like,
devils that you could get.
I understand that the reason that they had to go with Paimon is because Pazuzu was already taken, and so was just Satan, by better versions of the same movie.
So was just Satan.
Because that's the one in Rosemary's Baby, right? Yeah. They don't name the devil in that one. They're like, it's going into Old Scratch.
No, it's... the very end of it is them going, praise Satan.
Yeah, they're not praising Beelzebub or something, so we know it's going into the core Satan.
Yeah.
The original.
The OG.
Yeah, the OG Satan. Where this one was like, well, we can't do Satan. We can't do Beelzebub because he's in some other movie. We can't use Pazuzu. Who's left? this dweeb named Paimon. His name is Paimon. He rides on a hippopotamus camel. That sounds ridiculous. What's his deal? He's the god of petty mischief. Oh, fiddle-dee-dee. He'll be perfect.
Oh, good. That means that any dumb shit that happens in this, we can go ahead and write off as, oh, Paimon's just mischievous.
Here's another problem I have for you, John.
Riddle me this.
After the mom cuts her own head off, she goes floating up into the house to worship Paimon. But she's a headless corpse. Paimon left her. Why is she still floating around?
That assumes that Paimon was in her to begin with. It was, which I still don't understand.
Paimon was 100% in her because the sequence of events in that scene is unmistakable. She tries to chase him into the attic. When she can't, she just floats into the attic, and then she cuts her own head off after he jumps out the window.
She's cutting her own head off before he jumps out.
No, but she doesn't finish the act of cutting her own head off until after he has jumped out the window. Once he jumps out the window, here's the sequence of events. Saw, 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 cut, thump, light goes into him. Light, the moment you hear the thump is the first moment where you first start to see the light come out. So it's definitely that Paimon's spirit came out of her because she finished cutting her head off and went into him. So that was why I was asking earlier in the review, what was she going to do if she just caught him without cutting her own head off? What was her agenda at that point? Like, she was chasing him around all wild, crazy through the house. If she caught him, would she be like, all right, sit here. Saw, 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 saw. What was that? It's just inconsistency.
Maybe she was going to knock him out and then cut her head off?
Maybe because you need to be unconscious for Paimon to go into you? I don't know.
I don't know.
There's no rules.
There's nothing in this movie that makes sense once you get to the third act. Up until, like, through act two, you're like, oh, this is a horror movie that has an internal, consistent idea behind it. It's super atmospheric. It's creepy. It's got good ideas, great actors. This is awesome. And then the third act happens. You're like, what the fuck did you do to this movie?
Yeah. And it does the thing I don't like in horror movies where it builds to an insane crescendo and then it just ends. And it's like, well, that'll haunt them more than figuring out whatever the fuck any of this was. And I'm like, no, you don't.
It would be fine if they had gone with something that you thought was probable. But the fact that they just throw this third act curveball of, no, it's actually Satanism, and then don't do anything, and all of the rules stop making sense.
It would be like if Cabin in the Woods ended in the scene where Thor ran into that giant shield thing. If you're just like, whoa, a giant shield thing, what's that? Credits. You're like, what? No, hang on. What's going on?
Oh, I need to know things.
There's so many. You didn't earn this. You didn't earn any of this.
Yeah, okay, I want to say this. I didn't like The Witch. The Witch was bad for me. It was very atmospheric. It was very good at doing that in the same way that this movie was.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same way, I just didn't get anything out of it. There was nothing there for me to grab onto and be like, this is interesting.
It's way too many of what we were complaining about earlier in the movie. Building crescendos of music that lead to scene changes.
Yeah. And
there's only so many of those before you get bored of them.
Yeah. I don't need jump scares in my movie. But if you're going for creepy and atmospheric, but the way you do that is the exact same thing every single time. After, like, the third time you do it, I go, okay, I get it.
Yeah, oh, boy.
I see the trick that you have done.
Oh, boy, the violins sure are swelling. I bet we're about to jump cut to another scene.
Yep. And it's sort of like the anti-jump scare in that it jumps to another scene, and I'm like, oh, I got less interested.
My least favorite thing is when they do that in movies, where they jump away from a genuinely terrifying thing that happens to another scene with the same characters in it, and they don't explain what just happened. Like, we're running from a ghost. And now we're in a subway. You want a sandwich? You want to get a...
Yeah, now we're in the subway.
Let's get these sandwiches here. What about that ghost that was just chasing you? We're not
a 6-inch meatball.
That's not what we're doing. We're not resolving the previous scene. That was a different scene, man.
Man, we got away from the ghost. It's fine. Anyway, cold cut trio.
I'm about to go crazy on an Italian meat trio. Please.
Please.
Please and thank you. Make me a chicken pizziola. I know it's not on the menu anymore, but I know you know what it is.
Yeah, God, we've been going for like an hour and a half now, and I don't care. I'm just so angry at the third act of this movie.
Yeah, it's such a waste. Because it basically tries to pull the same ending that The Witch tried to pull, which is everybody but the one kid dies suddenly and in crazy, stupid ways. And then what happens to the kid? Well, they get offered the promise of immortal devil power. The end.
I mean, at least in The Witch, it was like the whole time you had this denial of what was going on. And at the very end, you're like, oh, no, the devil is real and the devil is here and you can become a witch if you want to. And you're like, okay. But in this, it was just, hey, third act Satanism, and now the kid has no choice. The rules don't make any sense.
Man,
fucking Ryan Stiles is here. Colin Mockery's possessed by the devil.
Oh, we're going to pull Wayne Brady up to play another game where he has to sing, as it turns out.
Oh, yeah. Wayne Brady comes up and sings a song about Paimon.
How come only Wayne Brady ever gets called up to sing? Is it because no one else on the show can sing? It is. But it sure does seem incongruous. They should really try to find another guy that can.
Yeah. Well, especially like, this is a game. We're going to have Wayne Brady come up. I'm like, yeah, no shit, you are.
Yeah, of course, because you're going to have him sing something. Oh, are you going to have Colin Mockery and Ryan Stiles act things out that he is singing? It feels it's less improv-y.
At least in the last game, Hoedown, they all get to do it.
I know, that's true. The Hoedown was good shit. But a lot of the things in that game, that series were like, we're going to do a crazy improv thing that's exactly the same as every other time we do it. I'm like, wait, you guys forgot what improv is, didn't you? Oh, wait, no, you didn't. I just remember what improv is. All right, so you want to do your favorite and least favorite? Or lead me through it? It's your show.
I'm done bitching about the last act of this movie.
I think we've curb stomped it enough.
Yeah, we've hated on it enough. Yeah. People know. All right, let's get to the best and worst. Jeff, your best, which you've already said.
It's the scene where Toni Collette yells at the 17-year-old. I'll stay consistent. The supernatural elements in this movie are fascinating. I love the light effect that draws characters towards things. I'm not a huge fan of the naked people hiding in dark spaces. It's just not as interesting as I think they thought it would be. I'm not scared of a fat math teacher. I'm like, oh, look, a fat math teacher's in the closet. Look at that. What do you know?
Naked math teacher in a closet freaks me out. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that right now.
It's fair enough. But I'm like trying to monetize it in my head. I'm like, how can I make money off this fat math teacher?
I got to get a camera on this fat math teacher.
I'm going to be rich because that shit is my math teacher naked in my house looking at me and smiling. That is a gold mine. You're going straight to YouTube.
You are going to be money for me.
But I mean, the scares were pretty. Everything was cool. But the psychological tension of the scene where the mom just unloads on her teenage son was powerful. It was effective. And I love that his response wasn't to start crying and run away, but to straight up undercut her.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part of the whole movie. You?
Definitely the scene where Charlie gets her head knocked off. That entire scene from them racing in the car to him getting home and lying down. That whole bit is perfectly done.
It was so good. If this was a short film and that was the only part of the film, that would have been the best.
It was amazingly well executed. I mean, great acting on his part, as well as just the pacing of it, how they show what happened. It was such a well-done scene.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And note that neither of our suggestions had anything to do with Satanism.
Yeah, nothing that happened here had anything to do with the resolution of this movie.
Yeah.
Hey, what was the worst part of this movie for you?
I'm going to have to try and pick. It's when Gabriel Byrne gets set on fire.
I was going to say, it has to be the book part for you.
The logical inconsistencies of that scene are maddening. But it's also, I mean, the same logical inconsistencies of the ghost being told to move something left or right with no point of view for where the ghost is standing.
Honorable mention to left or right.
Yeah. You got to set things up better when you're talking to an invisible spirit. I mean, you've got to establish some rules. Put another cup down and say, move this towards that cup for yes.
Or at least say my left or my right.
Yeah. Move it stage left.
Move it with a shins.
Stage left still wouldn't work because you wouldn't know what they stage left for you is still, it just means right. So anyway, yeah, it's the scene where Gabriel Byrne gets set on fire, and then he does what people do when they get set on fire in movies, stand there and just go, oh, and not like, you know, trying to stop, drop, and roll about it or anything.
Yeah. All right. That's a good pick.
Yeah. You?
Oh, man. I honestly want to just say, in the very last scene, as soon as they went, praise Pazuzu, I was like, this is Rosemary's Baby, you can go fuck yourself.
I love that you went to Pazuzu because it's, yeah. Pyman.
Oh, it is. I cannot Pyman is not gonna stick in my head ever.
Pazuzu's the exorcist demon.
I know. Fucking Pyman is not it is not a name that you're like, ooh, that sounds like a creepy demon.
Well, notably, I'm pretty sure they mention which cardinal direction Pyman is. They say, yeah, that he's of the northwest. And I feel like they also did the same thing with Pazuzu in the Exorcist movies. I think he was the east demon or something.
Meh.
So I people are going to correct me on which demon is which. But
I'm sure. But it doesn't matter.
But I remember that coming up during Exorcist only in the clips I've watched. I've never seen the whole Exorcist movie. Fuck that movie.
Oh, I've watched it. And
I'm kidding. I've seen all of Exorcist. I have not seen any of the sequels.
I have seen two of the sequels. I think I've seen Exorcist. Actually, no, I've seen three. I've seen Exorcist 1, 2, 4, and the latest one.
Ugh, for Christ's sake. How are there so many Exorcist movies?
I don't know. It took me forever to see the first Exorcist, by the way. It was like my great shame as a horror person that I was like, oh yeah, I just haven't watched The Exorcist.
I saw Rosemary's Baby for the first time last year.
God, it's so fucking bad. I hate Rosemary's
awful.
Baby.
I hate every movie from the 70s.
I hate Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
Come at me, internet. I hate all the well-loved horror movies.
Maybe stop making them, because it's just this movie again. This is just another reiteration of it. This could have been called Rosemary's Baby 2, The Witch.
Rosemary's Witch Baby.
Yeah. The Vavitch 2. The Vavai. That's what this could have been called.
All right, we're going to give this movie a rating, 0 to 5 each. That's going to give the movie a rating out of 10. Jeff, this movie.
2.5. A lot of this is very technically well done. There's a lot of pretty stuff to look at. There's a lot of neat things. There's a lot of intentionally very well done tense scenes. There's so much of this movie that's not worth throwing out with the bathwater of the end of it that is still worth checking out.
Oh yeah.
So if it came on in streaming, it would be worth watching. 2.5 for me.
I'm going to give it 3.5 for me. Much the same thing you said. There's so much to love about this movie, and my boner that I have for the end of this movie doesn't make the rest of this movie any worse. And even the shit that I hated was still, like, well shot. It was very well presented. It was just dumb as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give it 3.5.
I would have been willing to go there, but my cardinal rule of movies is don't break the rules that you establish. If you put some rules in your movie, follow them, because that way it feels like a journey for me.
Yeah.
And you're allowed a couple of rug pullouts, you know. You're allowed, oh, the rules have changed. That's fine. I'm okay with that. This movie has far too many, this just doesn't make any fucking sense, and far too many, this is the third dream sequence in a row.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go, the rules have changed, then stick with those rules and make it so that when you look back in the movie, those rules still make sense.
Yeah.
If you look at the end of this movie and then look back at the beginning of the movie, you're like, wait a minute, none of this matters.
Yeah. I mean, I have to give this movie the same point reduction I gave to Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, because it had like 6 fucking dream sequences in it. So same thing here. Too many dream sequences. Too many, this lady might be crazies.
So
a 6.
This gives us a 6 out of 10. Definitely one of the higher ones that we've rated, but still not amazing.
Yeah, yeah. No, if you were going to go see this in theaters, don't let us stop you. Yeah. Although, why the hell did you listen to this?
I mean, like I said at the very beginning, this is definitely one that is worth a watch, but I don't think you need to spend theater money on it.
No, it's going to be fine when this one's on Netflix in November.
Yeah, there's nothing going on in this movie that needs a big screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you so much for listening. If you're like Jeff and you want to monetize everything, then we've got a Patreon you could go to.
You can go to our Patreon for only $1 once there.
Go to patreon.com/systemmastery. You can support us however you like. It helps us. It lets us keep doing what we do here, making fucking 2-hour-long reviews of an hour and 45-minute movie. And you can get all of our bonus content for all of our other shows. $1 gets you all the System Mastery, $2 gets you that, plus all the Expounded Universe stuff. But like I say, even if you don't listen to anything else, anything you support will help us keep this show on the air as well.
Yeah, absolutely it will. And, you know, we're not completely against the idea of generating additional content for this show.
Indeed.
We're always on the lookout for another show to do. We've been talking about some AP stuff. We've also been talking about maybe running a series of some kind and making that the AP content for this show. So there are options. Let us know what you'd like us to do and what you'd be willing to give us more money for. Do you want my pee? I can mail you my pee.
What, do you want a picture of a smiling naked math teacher? I'll do it.
I took so many screenshots of the screen at that point. I might as well have been. There was literally a woman 2 rows in front of me taking selfies throughout the entire movie.
So fucking annoying. Why is it always you? When I go see a movie, nothing happens, and then every time you come back from seeing a movie by yourself, you're like, there was 13 kids in front of me and they couldn't stop yelling.
I don't know what it is. In this case, it's my fault that I had to survey the entire theater. Convinced that I was not going to like the movie because I don't like horror movies in general, I took the back row, so if I was correct and the movie was super boring, I could play Hearthstone without bothering anybody. Unfortunately, that meant I had everyone in front of me.
Yeah.
And there was a woman in front of me who was literally lining up, taking selfies, and then opening up the editor feature and adding like hearts and frames and shit to them.
Jesus.
And then throwing them away and doing it again.
God damn. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to be back in another couple weeks with another movie review for you here. Until such a time as we do that, you have a good one.